Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Rob Barron. You can find him at Monsieur Judge on Twitter. Before we start reviewing the bloodbath that we've witnessed in the Ashes, I'd just like everyone to know that you can become a paid subscriber of ours because, you know, all of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our patrons on Patreon. And if you become one, you can enjoy ad-free content, you can talk to us exclusively, and you can give us podcast recommendations. So then, Rob, Australia have effectively defeated England by 82 runs in the Adelaide Test to go 3-0 up in the Ashes and retain it in style. Commiserations to you as a fan, but congratulations to you because you're going to have a very merry Christmas now. You've got the quick Christmas sweater out already as well.
No surprise. Advance warning, my computer is playing games and it really wants to kick me out of this podcast. So if I disappear, I will be back. No surprise. We've spoken about it at the end of each test about what's going wrong. And you can't solve problems that are that seismic. I really hoped, and we saw a bit of it from Jamie Smith, which was the bit I really enjoyed of this test. I really hope that the Baz ball would have come out in that chase and they'd have just gone for it. Sod it. You know, we're 2-0 down. We've based all our success, all our methodologies on one way of playing. Where the hell was it? Let's smack. And it was a good deck. Get back into it. And there were reasons why they could have smacked. Lyon got injured. Stark was looking a bit tired, understandably. Cummins isn't fit, as he said. He still bowled like one of the best bowlers of all time in the first innings, but he wasn't fit. There were chances there for England. I mean, obviously, daft shots happened. And, you know, Duckett played like a man that hasn't played any first-class cricket all year, which is basically true. He just plays tests. He's played one first-class game otherwise. And then he plays T20s, and they look like a team that didn't prepare properly, which they are. At least they came out and said they didn't prepare this time. But from a fan's point of view and from a sort of English watching public's point of view, it's not a good look when you sat on the piss for 5 days before the test match and then you play like idiots. It's not a good look. Maybe practice the cricket. And they're not doing it behind closed doors where they're getting papped or whatever. They're doing it sat with the punters with stacks of cash falling out of their pockets in public, just nailing pints. Like, that's not a good look when you're 2-0 down and you're actively not preparing for game number 3. And the only thing they did prepare for here, Behram, was booking that holiday. They booked the Noosa holiday over a year ago.
Are you saying that they did not end up playing any beach cricket at Noosa and they played beach golf instead?
Is that what you're saying? That's a fact. They played beach football. And I'll tell you what else they tried to organise. Stokes said, because I don't know if there's any truth to this bit, but they'd had a few too many the day before. And Stokes said, let's run it out in the morning. I'm running to whatever the landmark was and back tomorrow morning. He was the only one that went. Nobody turned up. And then the fitness and conditioning coach, at least they've got one of those. They don't have a fielding coach. More on that later. He said, we're all going for a run. 7:30 tomorrow morning. Turn up if you want. Three of the squad turned up. Tong, Bashir, Jamie Smith. So the rest of them thought, well, a lion's better and sitting outside in the sunshine drinking pints is better. I agree. I always choose to go for pints in the sunshine instead of going running. Look at me. However, I don't get paid £1 million a year to play cricket for England. So the excuses, to be fair, they haven't come out and said loads of excuses. They basically said, well, you've caught us, haven't you? The hand is in the cookie jar. We got crumbs all over our face. We're sorry. Too late. 3-0 down. 3-0 down. They'll do loads of stupid stuff in the next two. Australia are going to get hammered now all over Christmas, and rightly so. Who knows what's in store for us on Boxing Day? We know Cummins isn't going to play. We know Lyon isn't going to play. Who knows whether Smith will bother? Anything could happen in the fourth test, but who cares? When Crawley comes out and says things like, this could still actually be a pretty good series if we only lose 3-2. That is a disgrace. Those sort of comments cannot happen. That is they're still sticking the two fingers up to the British public. I hope, as an England supporter, that it's 5-0 and heads roll, because then the future has a chance. If they, you know, Australia get hammered and in Test 4 and then play all the kids in Test 5 and England do scrape out of it with some sort of respectability, it will give them more incentive to act like idiots again as we go on. I mean, Australia played really well. The bowling particularly, I thought, was very good. Everyone said like Jamie Smith got all the pelters. I thought he was the best bat in the second innings. Him and Crawley, he did exactly the right thing. Where do you want to start? Where do you want to start, mate?
I mean, at least they took the game to day five, right? Otherwise, you would have been even in a bigger fix, I suppose, and wouldn't have had a very good Christmas either. And now we've seen the sweater, which people are already loving in the comment section. Look, I mean, England have been out-batted, out-bowled, out-fielded, out-caught, out-thought. Everything has not, you know, kind of worked out for them. And Australia were the team which had injuries. They didn't have a fixed batting order throughout this Ashes series. I mean, they have adapted really well. They've problem solved on the go and their execution was far better than England. And they were the most skilled side. And at this point for me, you know, covering the series as a neutral, I either want it to be 3-2 or 5-0. The 4-1 bit would really be like a damp squib for me now because I'm looking for arcs, I'm looking for narratives. And this series is over in 11 days. Now, as you mentioned, Australia won't have Nathan Lyon in the next test or in the remainder of the Ashes series. Cummins has confirmed that he won't be playing that test match. I'll be keen to see whether Australia bring in two seamers in Doggett and Nisa, or maybe, you know, we see a Todd Murphy or a Kuhneman, you know, come in for Lyon. I'm not sure. Maybe they give a game to Bo Webster. They might just fuck around now. However, it is the World Test Championship and every test match matters. There are no dead rubbers. But Australia will probably think that, hey, I mean, we're at the top of that table anyway. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough series to cover now. Here on, even the commentators had checked out, Rob. I don't know if you got like Channel 9 commentary or not, but Skull was giving movie references throughout the test match. I heard, what, three different movie references. Kindergarten Cop, No Country for Old Men, and there was one more that I cannot quite remember anymore, but the third movie was also quite funny. Basic Instinct. Basic Instinct was the third movie. They kept talking about Plum Chicken throughout this test match. I mean, they didn't know what to talk about now because it has been a bit of a non-contest. It's been a non-contest.
So you said we've been out four, out-batted, out-bowled, out-fielded, right? No disgrace whatsoever to be out-bowled by this Australian team, right? Australia's bowling on paper is way better than England, right? Way better. Mm. Even the reserves. I don't think Doggett should be better than the others that England can put out, but the others that have played for Australia in this series are better than the Jofra aside, probably. You know, you'd rather have Jofra than Nisa and Bowland, wouldn't you? But Jofra was excellent in the first innings and he's been really good in this series, really. Like some of the stick he's got, he's performed admirably all series long for a guy that's only played, you know, what, 15 tests before the start of this series. He's done really, really well. The rest of them, crap, pretty much.
Yeah, but Rob, I understand that in this test match, Australia's bowling attack was far better because Cummins was back and so was Nathan Lyon. And if you have an attack featuring Stark, Lyon, Hazelwood, Stark, Lyon, Cummins and Boland, that is always going to be a better one than England because Australia's third best seamer is better than pretty much England's best seamer, right? I get that. But Steve Smith was a last minute injury in this one, right? He had symptoms of vertigo. He's Australia's best batter. And Usman Khawaja, who wasn't even supposed to play this test match, comes out and scores 82 and then 40. So that tells you a story. Australia have had this sort of situation throughout the series and it hasn't hurt them one bit. In fact, they look the more prepared side. And England looked like the side which have to firefight last minute. And that's the big contrast that really alarms me. And I am underwhelmed, even though I'm not English. I was colonized by the English. Yeah. I should be happy, but no, you know, I'm not. I really wanted them to put up more of a fight because I was also in the camp who was saying that, you know, they could do something over here. My prediction was 2-2 in five matches. And here we are, 3-0 down England in just 11 days.
So the bit that Broad said that he's now getting hammered for, that this is the worst Australian team since 10-11, and this is the best English one. He got the best English one bit wrong, but the Australia teams haven't been as bad as this for those 14 years. I totally agree with that. When you see what happened to them, no Hazelwood whole series, no Cummins for half of it, no Lyon for most of it. That's huge, absolutely huge bits of information. No Smith. They don't have an opener. They didn't know who was going to open, and they ended up opening with Weatherald and Head by accident. Heads
and Khawaja never even opened.
But why did Khawaja score 80? Because he got dropped. He nicked off when he was on what, five? Catch it.
Yeah. So I can give you the breakdown. So you mentioned how they don't have a fielding coach, England, and they've dropped 8 catches in the last 2 test matches. I'll go through them. Of course, I want to give them some flowers over here because Crawley took a spectacular one-handed take in the first innings, and the Brydon Cast catch of, who was it? Cam Green. That was really good as well. But let's look at the 3 catches that England did drop, right? Usman Khawaja dropped on 6, ends up scoring 82 runs. That's 76 runs, okay? Mm-hmm. Then they dropped Alex Carey. Brydon Cast at short cover dropped him on 52. Carey in that inning scored 106. So that is a margin of or deficit of 54 runs. 76 plus 54 is 130. And then in the third innings, Travis Head was dropped by Harry Brook at gully on 99. He ends up scoring 170 runs. So add another 71 runs. That's 201 runs. England lost this test match by 82 runs. So catching has been miserable. And on the other hand, Australia have pretty much grabbed every opportunity that's come their way. Manus Labuschagne was in Superman mode at second slip, right? Like he was taking, or he took 2 incredible one-handed takes. So there's a stark difference over there as well. And I feel like the fielding really did hurt England, especially in these last 2 test matches, because let's be real, over here, had they, you know, bowled Australia out for 100 less runs in the first innings, which was possible, things could have been vastly different.
Yeah, so if you have an inferior bowling attack, right, you're going to have less chances to take 20 wickets than the opposition. Mm. So you must be at least as good, if not a lot better, really, at fielding. So fielding is 2 things at the top level. It's practice and concentration, right? So you've got to look up Manus Labuschagne. Is he a technically better athlete than the England slip cordon? Argue it if you want, but not really. Like they're all about the same, aren't they? So
yeah,
they're all fit, athletic, professional sportsmen. So you've got to practice and you've got to concentrate. England have proved throughout this series they can't concentrate, right? That's a fact. But the practice bit, it all comes down to planning again. So they've got like, Rob Key, I've said this many times, I've read his book Before the Ashes, and it says the coach is the guy, the coach is the thing that takes you to the ground, right? There's no one needs coaching. You tell coaches to bugger off. So, right, he doesn't believe in upskilling these shit players. He doesn't believe in that, right? So how are they going to get any better? Then they don't have a fielding coach. Why? Why not? Really important job. The guy that teaches them how to field. They're crap at fielding. Get a coach then. Be better at it. Don't have one of those. Collingwood was assistant coach. Now, there's loads of rumours why he's not there, but he got binned off ages ago. So they should have replaced him. Didn't bother with that. The bowling coach scenario or what has happened there, complete fiasco. They had Jimmy doing it, who obviously should have been playing in this, but they sacked it.
Yeah.
So they had Jimmy doing the bowling coaching, and he said, lads, this is how atrocious this setup is. He said, lads, start of a really important series. Do you mind if I miss the first test, right? From the bowling coach with all these young bowlers that have replaced him, right? He's giving them all his 700 wickets of experience to benefit the side going forward. He played in a charity golf tournament instead, right? So that's him. So then they go, Jimmy, of course you can play golf. Golf's way more fun than cricket, right? That's the mantra, isn't it? So then they go, who else did we have? Southey? Lads, I'll do it. But if anyone offers me any money to play in some shit franchise comp, IL20, I'm playing. Off you go, Tim. Enjoy it, mate. We'll see you when you're ready. And then they said to Saker, like the week before the Ashes, do you mind being the bowling coach? And he was like, well, yeah, of course. Great. I've done it before. Did it 10 years ago. He hasn't worked with any of these guys. How is he going to make Atkinson, Cass, Tong, whoever else gets on the park, better in a week? Because they called him up because everyone else is playing cricket or golf. Nonsense, right? So they didn't prepare. That's why they're getting stuffed. Now, you can pick the bones of this test match apart as much as you want, but they made catastrophic failures in preparing for this series. They kind of admitted a couple of them, but then the bubble that surrounds them of basically their mates in the media, so Key's mates with all the Sky Sports commentators because he was one. So he, how on earth, I mean, if it was one of my mates, I would still bag them off. And I think all my mates would know this. If I'm underperforming, I expect to be told. And I don't mind being told, right? But they are wildly underperforming this lot. But because they're mates, no one's hanging them out to dry. And the who was it? Phil Tufnell the other day saying on TMS, you know, used to be an institution of decent comment when I was growing up. Less so now for a lot of it, I think. But he came out and said, well, you can't get rid of McCullum. That'd be knee-jerk. He's a great lad. He's brilliant at his job and all this. And then you think, well, yeah, I remember when you two did the Netflix show of playing golf in nice places around the world. He's his mate. And they go to the pub. So he's not going to say sack him, is he? He's got a great job. It's the What is it? The biggest trick the devil pulls off is convincing everybody he doesn't exist. Well, the biggest trick that McCollum pulled off is convincing everyone that results don't bloody matter. So you have the captain coming out and saying, we don't understand the World Test Championship. We don't know what the rules are. All right, cheers. Well, I'll pay 180 quid a day to watch you then. And then you've got the players buying into this mad ethos of let's have as, literally saying, let's have as much fun as you can. That's it. Have loads of fun. Well, it's not fun when you're getting stuffed by Australia, who are now openly mocking you because you've been shit. And they're not all that good. Like, the bowling attack's brilliant, but Weatherald, old man Khawaja, Cameron Green not doing anything, English not doing very much. There's quite a lot of holes that they could have attacked in this setup, but they haven't prepared well enough. So they've got no idea where the holes are, let alone where to attack.
Honestly, despite all the shortcomings Pat Cummins is really tall. His middle finger is short. Despite all of England's shortcomings, sorry guys, I've been underslept. I feel like if they had just got their catches in these last two test matches, right? Even if they've got like 2 out of 3 in this one, and I don't know, 3 out of 5 in the previous one, they could have potentially given themselves a solid shout. Because look at Australia. Look at how exceptional they've been in the field. Of course, they're better bowling units, so there'll be more chances. But they don't really let go of them. I think I can remember like 1 or 2 half chances that went down in this test. There was the Cam Green one, maybe one for Carey. That's it, right? I'm not counting the ones that fall short because England had plenty more. That shit kept happening anyway.
Yeah.
And then, did you hear the Stokesy comment regarding, you know, what could you have done differently as captain? He's like, called heads on the first two tosses and won this one. I don't get that. So the toss should have been irrelevant in this test anyway because Cummins opts to bat first. And I was like 100% certain that Stokesy would have fielded he would have liked to chase, right? Like, surely he would have liked to chase now.
Yeah. And England won the first two tosses, right? So So that was just a flippant, salty comment, wasn't it, from Stokes, as was the whole interview. Now, his, like I said at the time, his PR team have been on overdrive over a decade of you know, taking time off for mental health. Understandable, you know, we've all been through shit. But when you've got an Amazon crew following you around during that time and making a load of coin off them following you around doing what you're doing, it comes across as slightly disingenuous. But he's got this press coverage. I mean, there are guys that have missed tours for reasons where they've been hammered by the English public. But this guy's missed tours for beating people up, and he's missed tours for smashing the hell out of a locker and being naughty and being investigated, and everyone just gives him a pass. Like, fine. But to come out now, and now's the bit, he's also, like, during this series, everyone says what a great captain he is, and even the interviews afterwards to McCollum and stuff, I was like, at least you've got Stokes. He's left from the front. He's a great captain. He openly came out and said they were weak. He said, I don't want weak men in my dressing room. Then he threw them all under the bus for implementing the tactics that he told them to do, for playing the strokes that he told them to play. And then he came out when we'd lost and blocked out of pettiness and spite almost, when he had really, really good batting conditions in the second test. Just blocked for 3 or 4 hours, knackered himself. Again, strike rate for the series of the spearhead of this attacking brilliance, 37.5. He undermined the whole ethos himself by coming out and blocking at the times when they should have been whacking. So this test was actually an okay performance from England. If they'd have caught, if they could catch, they probably would have won this test, or at least they would have got close. Like the last sort of day and a half, you know, bowling Australia out, taking those last 6 in no time, you know, I really wanted a day 5 financially. And I was like, the reason why I backed that, by the way, the day 5 at 2-1 was nothing to do with any England competence, right? I'm not that daft, but it was as soon as the toss had happened, it's like, well, Australia won't declare, will they? And Australia will try and grind England into the dirt. And anyway, what transpired during the game, I thought England were pretty good. The last, you know, I didn't expect them to get anywhere near 350 in the fourth innings. Mm. That's record breaking stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, Baz even mentioned that the last 2 days of this test match, he was quite happy with it. But Australia should have never scored 371 runs in the first innings, right? I mean, that was... I even tweeted this out, that that's 50 runs too many, in my opinion. And people were like, oh no, it's a batting deck, this, that, the other. And I was like, this is England. They'll somehow manage to mess this up. And that is what happens. But more on that and the playing conditions after a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Bairam and Rob Barron. So go nowhere, because we will be back in like half a minute.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Bairam and Rob Barron, and we are currently discussing Australia's 82-run victory over England in the Adelaide Test, which has allowed them to go 3-0 up in the Ashes and, you know, kind of regain the urn that they haven't let go of for quite some time now. All right, then, let's talk about the surface, the playing conditions. First day, Jared and I on our Morning Glory show were both pretty convinced that, you know, this seems to be a bit of a two-paced pitch. That goes away, though. Day two onwards, it's a flat deck. It becomes a new ball pitch in the sense that you really have to cash in on the new ball, right? If you waste it, you've done yourself a huge, you know, disservice. And once you got your eye in, there were plenty of runs on the table on this surface. Really, really good for batting. And the ball did start to turn on day three. Nathan Lyon got the ball to turn quite a fair bit, but England didn't have a frontline spinner. Shoaib Bashir was specifically picked and groomed to play in this Ashes series because he was a quick whiz pick, tall lad, high release point, best bounce in the world, probably Australia, right? They thought he was unpickable or unselectable. He even went to that run that you spoke of with Stokesy. So that's kind of, it sucks to be Shoaib Bashir. And I'm not trying to slag off Will Jacks because I do feel like he's a talented batter, but he's not your frontline spinner. He's weaker than, let's say, Salman Ali Agha, who I don't rate as a spinner in Test cricket, right? Josh Tung came in for Atkinson. No Shoaib Bashir still. We'll come to Tung in a bit, but like, what have they done over here? Why not just continue to pick Leach then? At least he had experience.
Yeah. And Leach was like Stokes' favourite thing in the world, wasn't he, for quite a while? And, you know, I personally wouldn't have picked Leach when they did. You know, there were better options then. But Leach did fine. And one thing Leach could do was hold an end up. And he could also hold an end up with the bat. And once again, you know, he nearly got 100, didn't he, against Ireland?
I mean, he was out there, not out at Headingley as well. So Stokesy should have loved him or shown him a bit more love.
And that in itself is quite important, that you can have a spinner that can hold an ender. And I think that's basically why Jacks played. So Jacks is kind of he's a good batsman and he's an occasional off-spin bowler that doesn't threaten much. You know, he got a 6-for, didn't he, against Pakistan on debut.
I mean, I'll stop you right there.
Sorry,
you got a 6-for versus Pakistan. That is a different sort of ball game. And to be fair to him, he gets a lot of overs in this test match, right?
No, but he shouldn't have those overs. That's
mental. Yeah, he shouldn't have.
It's not Jax's fault. We've said it before. Yeah. If you want to pick me, I'll play, but I'll be crap. So he's not a spin bowler. So but it's like it's having 3 years to plan for it. And it's so you know, England are playing in the Football World Cup next year, and Matty Cash plays up front. I don't even know if he's English, but you know, some random right back just starts up front in the World Cup final. You know, you've been planning for this for ages. That can't happen, right? It's literally impossible that a random right back plays up front for England in the World Cup if England got anywhere near the final, which is obviously bad. But it can't happen, right? Because there's too much money and too much planning and too many people that can't allow that sort of nonsense to occur. But that's the.
I'm going on a tangent, but if a right winger plays for England up front in the World Cup who cannot track back, then Jamie Carragher is going to be pissed, dude. He's not going to have any of that.
Well, I don't understand how it's remotely possible. I've just seen he's Polish, Matt Cash. So sorry about that, everyone. some other right back. Anyway,
Nathaniel Klein. Let's go with Nathaniel Klein.
Okay, so he's back. He played. Is that that's the madness? Okay, so there's nothing wrong with what Will Jacks did. He performed about as well as could be expected for him. The fact that in the first innings, he bowled joint most overs, 20 each with Joff. Yeah. Is absurd first innings at Adelaide, right? Nathan Lyon's really, really good. He is allowed to bowl loads in the first innings. I get it. But for your part-time spinner to bowl 20 overs in the first innings is absolutely mental. But and then in the second innings, after the, what was it, day three, he'd bowled again and he'd bowled another 19 or 20. And he was going, and Jeetan Patel, who pissed me off no end with his comments, the spin bowling coach, came out and said he did really well holding an end down. Really well is not five and over in Test cricket, Bayram. Really well is non-threatening.
Also, I don't remember if you were up in the chat with Jared and myself when, you know, they brought him home. And I was like, what do they want? Khawaja to sweep? And what happens? Khawaja instantly starts sweeping. Do you not understand these skills that you are competing with? Do you not know what these strong zones are for Australia's batter? Don't just... Sure, I get that it's a good matchup for Jax, but you know that Khawaja will start sweeping him. You surely cannot want that. And credit to Jax, he does get him out, like, what, twice, right? But I just feel... It's kind of taking your foot off the gas when you're giving that many overs to Will Jax. However, there is one guy who did not take his foot off the gas. And I remember when this test started, and this is a fun story, let's tell people. Rob, on day one, first session, messages, are you guys ready for Jofra Archer's last test match? And he pulls off a Bairam over there because, look, if there's one guy we cannot fault in this Adelaide test who is English or plays for the England team and may not necessarily be English, it's got to be Jofra Archer. He bowled fast when something was going on in a heat wave, to add, gets 5 for 53 in his first bowling innings. And I mean, he bounces Jake Weatherald against the run of play. No one saw that coming. Then right after lunch, he dismisses Marnus and Cam Green in the first over. Albeit, you know, there's some mistakes from Marnus and Cam Green in that. And then he also ultimately cleans up Stark when he has a little bit of a tussle with Stokesy and traps Lyon LBW to bag that fifer, comes out to bat, slams his maiden test half century, 51 valuable runs. And even in that third bowling innings, he bowls a fair few overs, goes at, I think, I want to say an economy of less than two and picks up a wicket as well. So 6 wickets for him for, I think, 73 runs in this test with a 51 in his first batting inning. So, I mean, if someone showed that dog inside of them that Stokesy was alluding to, it's probably Joff. And I mean, he had been subject to a lot of criticism, some bizarre criticism as well, when Ryan Harris goes and he says that he should probably take off the gold chain to bowl faster. I mean, there was some really poor stuff in the media, and at least you got a response out of Jofra.
Yeah, there's only one person that comes out badly from that those sort of comments from Ryan Harris, and that's Ryan Harris. It's just really stupid thing to say. But I mean, Jofra is awesome and has been for a long time. And he gets criticized because he doesn't start his first spell at 95 miles an hour a lot. He's a rhythm bowler, right? He doesn't have to run from behind the sight screen. He's a rhythm bowler. So sometimes it takes him longer than others to get his rhythm going. His action is languid and nearly perfect. But he's not like a biomechanical freak who just charges in at a million miles an hour and lets it go. He's a proper bowler, right? And sometimes it all comes out well and sometimes it doesn't. I don't really understand how all that works. I'm not qualified to comment on it. But I know he's awesome, right? Because I watch cricket all day, every day, and I bet on it all day, every day. And Jofra is amazing. And he was amazing when he was at Hobart Hurricanes in the Big Bash, however many years ago that was. I thought his batting could have been really good. I knew his fielding was amazing, and he's one of the most exciting bowlers I've ever watched from the start of his career. But why would you play any more tests if you're him? Because he's now getting moaned at by his own captain on the field. I don't mind that, to be fair. Like,
I was kind of with Stokesy at that point because it's the start of a new day. You've got a new ball. You're giving width to Mitch Stark, who, for some reason, has now scored back-to-back 50s in this Ashes series for the very first time in his test career. Starkey scores back-to-back 50s, and Mitch Stark should not be getting to 54, right? Like, you should be cleaning Australia up within the first half hour. That's how quick you need to be. And the one delivery that does get Stark is aimed at the stump. So I can understand where Stokesy's coming from, that we've got no slips in. You bowled at the stumps, mate. What are you doing? Why are you giving them free runs? But then they are the two who kind of grind it out in that partnership as well. So I suppose they probably made up later.
I think so. I think that partnership was good. I mean, but Jofra... If you'd have said to me, Jofra's first test 50 will come off 100 balls, I'd say you're mental. That can't happen. So he'd knuckle down. He seems to be a guy that responds quite well when he's backed up against the wall, Jofra. He doesn't sulk, he fights. And that's the sort of character which has been sorely lacking from this tour from England. And I don't really think anyone else can come out of this tour and say, well, I really tried my best at all times. I really knuckled down and I really performed at the level that I'm capable of. You know, what's Ollie Pope going to say? And what's Ben Duckett going to say after this series? And all the others, really, like Brooke. I mean, how Jamie Smith gets all the pelters. Jamie Smith, right, when him and Jax came to the crease, England had a 2% chance of winning that game. And that's a fact, right? That's not a guess. It's not WinViz or Wasp. It's a fact. It was 2%. That's what the millions and millions of pounds of clever money decided in the betting markets, right? 2% chance. And when Smith hit that third four before he got out, England were like 16% to win at that point, and it was crashing. It was like the 10 minutes before that, the market was like, oh, bloody hell, they might actually do this again. They only needed 128 or whatever it was. And you, before the break, and you're thinking, well, if what can happen here? What can happen here? He did exactly the right thing, batting like that. Yes, the shot that got out looks rubbish because it was across the line just with a new ball, Stark. I get it. It doesn't look very good. But what Brooke did was much worse. And people have said, well, he plays a reverse sweep. It's fine. Watch the shot again. He's nowhere near it. He's not in the same postcode as that ball.
It's not even the correct length to reverse sweep, right? Like, you shouldn't be reverse sweeping that length unless you're coming really down the track or going extremely low. I'm not even sure what you should do. But yeah, Harry Brooke has been quite pathetic in this Ashes series. Joe Root has a bad test, gets dismissed by Patty Cummins both times. So there's a bunny alert situation over there. But I agree, day five batting from England, I take it. It was one of their better days. Jamie Smith's counter-attacking 60 was quite good. Will Jax's non-counter-attacking 47, also I'd give him some credit. And Brydon Carr, of course, also scores 39. But by then it's too late because when they start that day, they're really hoping for the rain to go a bit longer because there's no way they can chase down 228 runs with just four wickets in the kitty. Had Harry Brooke not played that monstrosity of a reverse sweep, perhaps they could have dared to dream England. But that doesn't happen because, of course, England aren't really fans of giving themselves a proper shot, especially in games which could be won. And that's been the trend throughout the series.
Quite right. It sounds mental. It sounds mad to say on another day or not too far away parallel universe, England would have chased those quite comfortably. And you're talking about the world record ever, 435. But
yes,
they absolutely could have done. If you want to get into it, Crawley got stumped when he was mega set, just wandering past one, right? It wasn't, it was a decent enough ball, but he'd faced loads of balls that good in the day and been fine. Crawley played really well. And you cannot hang out the guys to dry who actually scored the runs. But when you are 85 off 150, it wasn't a good shot. And it was at a very crucial time when he got out, just after Stokes had got out, wasn't it? So that's when you don't wander out of your crease. You know, it's bloody brains every time again. Now,
That was really, really close to stumps, right? You just play out the day. And this was cautious Crawley. He wasn't playing his, natural game in the sense that in the first innings, I didn't know whether it was plans given to him by the team or he was just nervous given that he's on thin ice. But he's dismissed on six and I'm like, oh, this might be the end of Zach Crawley. But then he comes out and scores that brilliant 85. I thought he was England's best batter in the fourth innings. And yeah, you're right. That dismissal, so much was wrong with it. You shouldn't be getting out stumped towards the end of day's play. You should be looking to kind of just see things off and then come out tomorrow with a fresh mindset. And you're also, kind of the only top order batter left. I know England bat deep, but there is an added responsibility now that the captain's out as well. So surely you can be a bit more cautious and not just get undone by line in the fashion that he got undone.
Yeah. And it's total lack of brain cells when you're approaching breaks in play. Duckett's dismissal. So Duckett looked like the guy that was terrible at test cricket when he played in Bangladesh 10 years ago or whatever it was, when he just got bowled by spinners every time he went to the crease for five off 10 or whatever. And you're like, honestly, I've gone about betting all the time, I know, sorry, but the lines for Duckett as a test match opener back in the day when he was playing against Bangladesh were like 15, whereas Steve Smith's line goes up at 40 and Coley's line goes up at 45. Everybody knew that he was going to get bowled straight away when he was playing against Bangladesh. He looked like that guy. Not the guy that has been superb for England in most formats, if not all, for over a year. But when he needed to prepare for this series, to come into it hot and not come into it cold, England were buggering about organising lengthy T20 international series against New Zealand instead of playing Red Bull. And he looked like a guy that hasn't played Red Bull for ages, and that's what he is, right? So he played an awful, non-aggressive, what was it, fishing outside off? When there's 4 minutes left till the break.
Dude, I mean, four minutes. Like I said, really, really impressed with the way England start off with the ball on day four. I'm like, okay, you know, they bowled Australia out fairly quickly. They scored 359 runs after they were, what, 270 odd for four? Something like that, right? And yeah, you've got 435 to chase now, which if anyone can, you guys can.
10 for four, mate. And they didn't get 350.
Yeah. Yeah, 310 for four, and they're bowled out for 359. And, you know, back in the day, or not even back in the day, go a year back in the day, just 1 year from today. And I would think that if anyone can, in theory, break the world record and chase down, you know, anything north of 418, 435, you could say, it should be England, because they do bat like that. And they do have that penchant for chasing down big totals. But when I saw that, you know, they need to kind of bazball their way out of this now, and there's no other way, I didn't back them, because, you know, I knew the pitch would turn a bit and Lyon would be in business. And it's just a woefully out of form batting unit. I mean, I don't want to spend any minutes on Pope, because I don't even want to know what the run line is on Pope these days.
He shouldn't be playing. And he shouldn't be playing. He's a bad starter anyway.
True.
And, you know, and then, as is Khawaja.
Yeah. But let's talk about Duckett a bit, because this is a guy who I have been a big fan of. I love the way he kind of reinvented himself. And him and Crawley, even if Crawley hasn't gotten the runs individually, the opening pair is essential to Bazball. It's been a very important cog in the success that they've had. And Duckett has scored, what, 97 runs in six innings? He's averaging 16 with the bat. And literally, you need to survive two overs. Lunch is going to come by, and then you see off the new ball. Once the wicket, you know, or the ball softens up, the wicket is good enough for you to get your runs over here. And they can't manage even that. And Duckett, again, fishing outside off, undone by Nathan Lyon's flight in the first innings. It's just been very, very disappointing in that regard. If anything, I know you wouldn't have enjoyed Stokesy's vigil, right? Because you wanted him to bazz ball. But I actually admired his resistance then, because no one else can stitch up 50 deliveries over here. And Ben Stokes ended up scoring, what, 83 runs off 198 balls. It was his slowest ever 50 in his test career, took 159 deliveries. And at least, you know, even though he anti-bazz balled and he's going to cop a lot of shtick for it, I still feel that at that point, you might as well see someone show some resistance, because England just cannot seem to last more deliveries than Scotty Boland can, right?
So, yeah, and I do get accused of just being anti-Stokes for every reason. And it's undeniable that he's good at cricket, right? He's definitely good at cricket. Mm. And he has done some things that precipitated his captaincy, which I agree with. You're like, well, if you want an inspirational leader, I think Stokes probably was the guy at the time. I think his off-the-field stuff probably means he shouldn't have got it. But if you look down the years in English cricket, you know, making Botham captain was an awful decision. Making Flintoff captain was an awful decision. He's that. Yep. He's the next one, isn't he? So they did it again, and it's failed again.
Failure is a strong word over here, because they weren't winning at all when Bazball started, and back then he had a lot of success.
Okay.
Flintoff never had that moment, did he?
No, he didn't. I mean, that was crackers. And he was mucking about, and everyone loved it. You know, he's on a pedalo when we should be practicing for a World Cup and all that sort of thing. And yeah. I think in Botham's era, they were literally having days off in the middle of test matches and getting belted all day, and everyone thought it was funny. So we're in different times now. Stokes, the thing of it is, right, he did bat for 200 balls or whatever it was, and he did get 80. And England really needed someone to get 80 in that first innings, or it would have been another utter hooning of a defeat rather than one where, to roll out a boring phrase, England can take some positives from it. However, once again, he decided to block when conditions were at their absolute easiest. And if you're going to win a test against Australia when you're 2-0 down, go back to what you based the whole planning on, the whole regime, and whack it. Don't just sit there blocking over and over again. He didn't hit 1-6 in 198 balls. This is a guy that hit shitloads of sixes last year.
He's got the most number of sixes in test history, right? Stokesy has that record. He beat McCullum's record. But to put things into context, and I want to talk about your bet over here as well, where you wanted this game to go to day five. England were 8 down for 168. We thought this game might be over in 4 days. that might be a bit lenient as well. That's when Jofra and Stokesy stitch up that 105-run partnership for the ninth wicket. England managed 286 runs in their first innings, and Australia have a lead of 85. At that point, you're thinking, okay, bowl them out for 200, maybe you have a shot. So in that sense, they do kind of weather a storm. But I get what you're saying. And Jofra shows us exactly what you're saying, because he does kind of start to slam it, right? And Stokesy also, when he comes out to bat the next day or the next morning, he is playing counter-attacking stuff, although got hit in the nuts nearly once again, which has become a bit of a theme. I think you have a point in the sense that it's a good batting wicket. The ball is soft. You go out there and do what you've been doing for the last 3 years. But then my counter would be that Ben Stokes has never truly bass-balled, has he? He's always been the sort of guy who just soaks in the pressure and then ultimately he flips a switch. Like that double 100 in, what was it, Joburg? That's a long time back.
Oh, the one with Bairstow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what used to happen, at the very start of the McCullum tenure, Stokes came out and tried to whack everything from ball one and kept getting low scores. That's what happened. And he's not good at that. He can't do it in T20s. He can't do it in ODIs. All his good work has been he sets and then he bangs, right? And Test cricket is about having gears, just like a car. It really is like that. You should have good Test players, the best ever, have all had gear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you know which one they're in. You know, the famous Tendulkar one where he put the drive away. He's in, and the Headingley one, sure, it was lucky. Stokes was in first for the best part of a day before he did anything else. And then he was able to light up. The thing with this one, so Jofra was able to light up a bit. Bear in mind, Jofra placed 100 balls. Jofra was able to light up. Mm. And Jofra was also doing it off the back of a hell of a big workload with the ball. After Stokes is blocking in the blazing heat, when the bowlers are bowling in that blazing heat, so there are runs to be had there if you want to take some risk and go after him. Stokes is fully capable of doing that. He's really, really good at smashing tired bowlers when he's mega set. He didn't do it. And then he was too tired to bowl. So Will Jacks is bowling for ages. So he's negated his soaking up of pressure, his 200 ball vigil, right? And then he can't bloody bowl. So we can't bowl them out because Will Jacks is bowling all day. That's the bit that just reeks of terrible planning and terrible tactics. It's like, sure, yeah, I'm going to block all day because I'm going to show you, I'm going to show some fight and we need runs, right? They got the runs. Well done. They got way more than I thought they were going to get from where they were. And then he can't bowl because he's too tired. And they came out and said that. Well, there's nothing wrong with him, but he's knackered. Well, that's not good enough, is it? You're playing in the Ashes. It's not good enough to say I'm too tired. Go out and bowl or bat differently if it means you can't bowl after. If you're the all-rounder and you've got an inexperienced attack, you've got a job to do. He's the captain. I don't really get it.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely one way to look at it. I want to talk about England's bowling at length, of course. But before that, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Bairam and Rob Barron. So go nowhere because we will be back in like half a minute.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Bairam and Rob Barron. We are dissecting Australia's victory at Adelaide over England by 82 runs. Australia 3-0 up. And one of the main reasons why England have flunked hard in this Ashes series is because their bowling attack, you know, kind of failed them. But it's not their fault entirely because they picked the wrong bowling attack for these conditions. England selectors and, you know, administrators probably didn't realize that the surface of the grass here in Australia now, the Kookaburra has a reinforced seam with plastic, and Australian bowlers are bowling the wobble seam delivery. They had the greatest exponent of the wobble seam delivery in Jimmy Anderson in history, and he was forced to retire specifically for the Ashes series. Now, we spoke about Jofra. He was great. Don't want to go over there. Let's talk about the rest. I do not think Brydon Carse is a new ball bowler, and I think he's bowled like 20 overs with a new ball in his county career or something like that. Consistently short, consistently wide, and yeah, I mean, he was even generating some swing on day one. His figures don't look all too terrible, 2 for 89, although he was expensive, and then 3 for 80 in the third innings, but that's largely because he finally does crack the new ball when the second new ball is available at the start of day four. So 5 wickets, second highest wicket taker in the series, and he's shit. If he's England's best bowler, well then, I mean, that's not your answer. So yeah, he can bat, sure, that's a plus, but Brydon Carr shouldn't be bowling with a new ball. I thought Josh Tung was actually quite disciplined, more disciplined than I've ever seen him bowl, actually. He's one of those guys who's really erratic, but has that really good money ball. His yeah. best delivery is really, really solid. And he takes 1 for 64 in his first bowling innings. I thought he deserved more wickets. And to be fair, catches were dropped off his bowling. But then he kind of finally comes back to take 4 for 70 in the third innings. I thought he at least deserved 5 wickets. Stokesy was wicketless in his first dig, and you mentioned how he couldn't bowl on day three, but day four, he sets the tone by, for the first time, bowling in a channel consistently, and he kind of inspires the rest. So I suppose at least he sets the tone on day four, although I was quite underwhelmed with him overall. And yeah, Will Jacks gets a lot of overs, but Carson Tung, pretty similar. Even Stokes throw him in there. It's a one-dimensional English attack. They've failed to land the ball consistently in the same area. They've given Australia width on width on width. And this is a team which loves to cut and pull. So I'm not sure why they've gone so short so consistently and why they just couldn't pitch the ball fuller on occasion. And they wasted the new ball a fair few times. So it's got to be frustrating for you watching these guys kind of try, right?
Yeah, it's also they have a really, really good bowling attack to learn from that they're playing against in the same game. So they often, like, Stark knows where to land it, right? In the first two tests, England just kept chucking wickets at him because they were driving him on the up. But he showed them where to bowl. And then Cummins, who comes out of nowhere, you know, he's been off for ages, and bowled beautifully, right? He said, this is where you're meant to land it, lads. This is how you do it. And Cass is I strongly suspect he's bowling to orders, because if you're getting these enormously lucrative central contracts, you're going to do as you're told by the setup. And in the last test, when Weatherall got runs, Cass bowled, I think it was 4 really good deliveries at him in his first over, and they swung. And they swung slightly late, and Weatherall had no idea what to do with those balls because they were full and they were swinging, and they were the slip cordon were like, aye. We're in business here. And then because 4 balls he didn't get the wicket that he could have easily got, he then drops his length by over a metre and starts getting hammered to the boundary on a regular basis, feeding Weatherall's absolute favourite thing, the cut shot. Smack, smack, smack. Yep. Anybody knows that's what he wants.
I've watched him for just this Ashes series. I have zero knowledge on Jake Weatherall, the batter, prior to this Ashes series. And I figured out in his first innings that this guy just loves to cut the ball. Don't feed him that cut shot. And that's what England consistently tried to do. And Jared was quite, you know, bullish on the fact that why did Cass continue to go round the wicket? Why couldn't he just have bowled over the wicket? They get Weatherall out like that, even though that was not a dismissal. I don't know why he didn't review that Weatherall, but it's just some weird plans with the ball. And I feel like, sure, you've picked the wrong attack, but surely you can crack it by test number 3 on what sort of lengths you should be bowling. Because other teams don't even get test number 3. Some teams only get test number 3. You have to problem solve. You have to figure stuff out when you've gone on tour. Surely Noosa or, you know, kind of swimming in the sea won't teach you that.
Well, yeah, Crawley said they didn't talk about cricket while they're in Noosa. So well done, lads. But so in England, right, the most common thing that people talk about, or men talk about generally, is football, right? You hear people talking about football in the pub, and it's all over every TV channel, all sorts of clowns talking about football and what their opinions are. And you hear it in every pub in England pretty much, as people bagging people, like professional footballers off and managers off for making tactical decisions and stuff. And I always think, like, Guardiola and Mourinho and whoever else is a football manager probably know more than me. Like, they probably, like, in fact, they definitely know more than everybody in this pub, unless a particular, like, legend manager has just strolled in, right? So they're saying they shouldn't do this tactically, they shouldn't do that. These guys are on a completely different planet with their knowledge and how to move players and do tactics and all that, right? So why on earth should we comment? And sometimes I feel a bit, not guilty, don't we're talking shit, but I feel like, well, why should I be coming out and saying what the England cricket team and what the head coach and the tactical people that are in charge, what they should be doing, when I cannot play cricket? I have never played to any level. I don't know how to do it, but I've watched millions of it, and I've analysed data for it for many, many years, and tried to work out what makes a team more successful tactically, and have done lots of statistical work on that. And I think I do understand the game. I should not be able to sit on the sofa and see what the captain should do now. I don't think that's ever happened. Even when England was shit, it was like, well, I get what they're doing. I get what they're trying to do. But it's like, I bowled 10 good balls. full, they swung, and the batsman was on toast. What should I do next?
Yeah.
Well, same thing? Or bowl exactly what he wants, statistically. I know they don't ever look at data or stats this lot. They can't possibly. But why the hell don't they?
What's going on? It's so tragic because England was the team that was, you know, early in terms of, you know, figuring out the data is important. They kind of set the benchmark in that regard. And now they're just anti-data, all vibes-based. And I don't know, like, they seem to be quite perturbed as well. Like, the Crawley comment, Baz saying that perhaps they prepared too much. And now, like, I don't know, Stokesy saying that, you know, bringing up the toss on what he could have done differently. I find it rather odd. And it is really tragic because, you know, it's a fun team to watch when it comes to playing Test cricket. I'm not going to take that away from them. I know that they probably kind of took that entertainment sort of narrative a bit too far, but I always tune in when England are playing Test cricket. So I feel like what we saw over here in these three Test matches was just kind of like, you know, accepting the fact that, okay, we're toast. Whereas in every single Test match, you could have fought back and potentially even won it. That's the bit that has disappointed me the most, because it's not like these are terrible cricketers. They are super skilled and maybe they might be a bit one-dimensional when it comes to both their batting and bowling. But if they execute those plans correctly or plan correctly, then they can come out with results. And they just haven't managed to do that or even gotten close.
Right.
The dominance of Australia is actually quite, you know, thorough, if you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, England absolutely, definitely should have won the first Test match and were a really short price to do so. And then from a wonderful position on day two at lunchtime, ended up losing the Test by the end of that day. Now, that's unprecedented levels of nonsense from England. I mean, that really is crazy that they lost that one. And that was probably their best chance. And then to go and lose so badly in the second one, making all the same mistakes but quicker, you know, or more stupid, when they basically had one bowler that was causing them problems and had done for, you know, 50 overs or whatever, and they just carried on playing stupid shots. Fine.
Yeah.
It's when you hear them talk, Bayram, in the media, and they come out and they go, well, did you prepare or didn't you? Because you've said you massively overprepared before one test that you got stuffed in. And then when you get stuffed in the next one, you say, well, we probably should have prepared, shouldn't we? And it's like, well, you could have played first-class cricket, but you decided to go to New Zealand and lose more T20s than you won. Who learned anything from that? Is it even going to help them in the T20 World Cup?
You could just observe some of the Australian boys, right? Like, for instance, both of Patty Cummins and Scotty Boland, they combined for 10 out of 20 wickets in this Test match. I thought Scotty Boland was one of the best bowlers on display. Surprisingly, he only gets 4 wickets, 3 for 45, followed by 1 for 35. And then Patty Cummins, he's not even bowling at full tilt. You can see that this guy is struggling. You know, his second, third spell is a big challenge for him. And yeah, he gets England's best batter out twice, who he's gotten out like 13 times now in his Test career. He also takes 3 for 69, followed by 3 for 48. And what they've done, essentially, both of Paddy Cummins and Scott Boland, was just to bowl that delivery in that corridor of uncertainty over and over and over and over and over again. Yeah. And England would inevitably make mistakes because even though the batting deck is brilliant, we'll just stick to our plan and not give them much room to play with, and we'll keep them cramped, and surely they'll make a mistake as well. So Australia, the team who throw their wickets away for the most part in this Test match, I know there's the Brook dismissal and the Crawley dismissal and maybe potentially a couple of other ones, but more wickets were thrown away by Australia. England were just outdone by great bowling, and you could have picked up on that all right, this is what the opposition team is doing. We'll try to do the same thing. It comes a bit too late when Stokesy bowls that 7-over spell at the start of day 4. That's far too late for my liking.
Yeah, and again, you're dead right. I mean, I was really cheering time to be taken out of the game, and I thought Australia would just bat, and they actually did quite well to get themselves back into it after those two ridiculous wickets. Was it straight after lunch? Yeah. Marnus and Green. Ridiculous wickets. Mm. They then get themselves to 180 for 4, and you think, right, now it's good batting conditions. Now you can just go on and bat England out of it fine. But I think 8 out of 10, really, tossed their wickets away. You know, Head sort of did. Yeah, Head did. Weatherall.
Yeah. That was a spectacular catch by Crawley. Weatherall, but he did
Weatherall
good ball,
but didn't have to. Marnus, Khawaja. I mean, Khawaja's dismissal when you faced 100 balls is 120 balls or whatever. Ridiculous. Wide one from Jacks. Green has had an awful series, but he's, you know, he's got £2 million quid for playing in the IPL, so he's winning.
True.
English looked quite bad in both innings, I thought. He still got 30-odd, didn't he, in the first one? But second innings, he looked like he had no idea. But yeah, Australia were chucking wickets away. And England got some really, really good batting conditions. But they don't bloody learn, do they, Bayram? And it's infuriating to see, like I said, when armchair fans can sit there and go, well, I know that this is wrong, what they're doing now. It's not difficult to call. You don't need to watch lots of cricket. You don't need to know stuff about tactics. You don't need to have played the game yourself. And that is embarrassing from an England point of view. Because, like I said before, I don't think this is the team that should be stuffing England 5-0. When England lost 5-0 post 05, winning that series, and they had revved up Warne, revved up McGrath, and all that batting lineup, and you think, well, Christ, understandable that they got beat 5-0 by that lot, right? They still threw a test away when Ashley Charles dropped the catch, but they made bad decisions at the toss and all that. Stokes is coming out after this one, Bearham, and saying, I wish I'd have called heads. You won the first two tosses, you idiot. Did you forget that? You won them, and you got to decide what you did, right? And then they definitely would have chased in this one. And what they should have done, and I was crying out for it after the toss, Baz, ball the hell out of it. Now's your chance. Die by that sword. Yeah. Now's your chance. I don't care if it's 400 in the fourth inning. Go for it. You've done it before. You've done silly chases before. Let's see what you've got. But use brains at appropriate times. So when it's 4 minutes to go and Duckett fishes, and then Ben Duckett practice the leave on his way out. That's one of the most embarrassing moments of the whole bloody shooting match, is him periscoping on his way off. What do you mean? He hasn't left the ball for 3 years. What are you talking about? So they have...
Ben Duckett ducks it never or doesn't leave a single delivery. I think he has the lowest leave rate in all of Test cricket. Yeah. So
what the hell's he doing?
I thought I'd bring this up, the super chat that you see on your screen. Tada Hu Chiliguchi, Chilguchi, interesting name, says Stokes is the second coming of Winston Churchill. So, that's okay. One hell of a super chat.
Not trying to wind me up. but what is that? It's the brains are so scrambled because you can see it by how they talk. How Stokes came across after each Test match in his interviews, and what the guys are saying, and they've sent out all the coaches, haven't they? Which is a surefire sign that it's going tits. But when Jeetan Patel is coming out and saying that Will Jacks did really well to hold an end up when he's going at 5 and over with no risk, and then to say, well, everybody else has said that this is a big series, not us.
Yeah.
And like, well, actually,
you said it.
Actually, mate.
Yeah.
They came out and said, Brendan McCullum, here's a direct quote for you. This is the biggest series of our lives. So it's not me, it's not you, it's not the media that have hyped it up. It's themselves. And they justified 3 years of underperformance because they were setting themselves up to do well in this series. So when you're getting stuffed, you can't say, well, this series didn't actually matter that much anyway.
Yeah.
You're all going,
that's not...
Like, come on. Like, we're not stupid. And that I think that's the most infuriating thing. They're treating us like we're thick.
Yeah, well, someone needs to tell Jeetan Patel that's not someone else's narrative. Stokesy's quote is from September of this year. So that's just a couple of months or 3-4 months before. And yeah, I mean, it's just shocking, honestly. But it's happened. And sure, the bad cricket you could still expect, I suppose. But the verbiage in the media has kind of winded people up a lot, and you can understand that. I mean, surely, like, they can come up with some better stuff to say. This is just awfully bizarre.
Yeah, and let's get this straight. Winning in Australia is really difficult, and England haven't done it for 14 years. 14 years. Yeah. I was lucky enough to be at that last Test match that we won in Australia, and it was bloody brilliant. But I stupidly went back the time after when we did get beat 5-0, and that is a lot less fun. But for English supporters who, you know, have a lovely time when they go, and it's not that hard to watch a cricket team lose, you still get to go to the pub after and see all the nice places. But 14 years of nonsense, but to come out and say, right, we've done everything we could for this series, and you have Will Jacks bowling 39 overs in the first innings in a bit. 39 overs. How on earth can any... If they'd have said, we totally don't give a shit about Test matches anymore. The World Test Championship, we don't know the rules. We throw Test matches in the bin just for a laugh, and they've done quite a few of those, declaring for no reason. The odds tumbling on the other team because they decide not to carry on batting in the first innings. Mental. All of this stuff. And they went, well, we don't care about tests. If you want to come and watch us, it's free, or it's a tenner, right? But it's not. It's 180 quid now, Bayram, to go and watch England play in a day's Test match cricket at home. And they don't know the rules of the competition they're playing in. because they keep losing half their points because they can't bowl their overs in time. So they don't know the rules of the competition. They don't care about, they openly say they don't care about anything. Confused, I think, is the word that Stokes used. But everything's about the Ashes because it's a big media storm and they make a lot of money out of the Ashes. However, to turn up and be clueless, right? So the bats that they could have relied on in this. So you look at that middle order and you go, Root, Brook, Stokes, with Smith Gilchristing after, you know, that's what his job is. Yeah. That sounds really good on paper. But then you go, well, Cummins always gets Root out. So that's a shame. And he's never won a test in Australia, one of the best bats England have ever had. Then you go Stokes, he's never won a test match in Australia. And Stark gets him out every time he bowls at him. So that's him done. Mm. And then Harry Brook, averaging, what was he averaging? Nearly 60 before this series started, 58 or something. Amazing talent, like so gifted at cricket. Is ramping, scooping, twirling around. What are you doing? Like his innings before he got out to the ridiculous shot was, if he'd have done it in a T20, that was an important game, you'd have gone, come on, lad. Like, you can't be that daft. You got to respect some of the best bowlers that have ever bowled in test matches are bowling to you here, and you're not set, and your team needs you, and you're 2-0 down. Stop it. Stop running all over the crease. Like, you can't bat like that. He's too good. So they had their chances, but it's the word. Everything annoys me. The words, the justification for it, the going back on it. They have had times where they absolutely should have smacked it in this series. And there's three occasions where they got the absolute best of conditions. And all three times they dropped anchor. And that's the exact opposite should have happened. When Stark is murdering them, put the drive away. Block.
Yeah.
Fight for your lives, because they only had one bowler that was causing them mayhem in the first test match, second test match, really.
Truth be told, they
had other ones.
I think this might just be the Mitchell Stark Ashes, right? He hasn't had one to his name in the same way that, I don't know, some certain players have. And back-to-back 50s for the first time in his test career. His 54 runs was a very valuable contribution in the first innings. He's a Sobers Award contender for me this year because he's taken the most wickets he's ever taken in test cricket in 2025. He's taking his wickets at what? Before this test was what, 16, 17 apiece? In this test, he only takes 4 wickets, but that 1-for-61 in his first outing, that features the wicket of Ben Stokes, which Australia really needed. And it's the snake back delivery with the new ball. And then 3-for-62 in the fourth innings where he's the one who gets Jamie Smith out. So it's still a valuable contribution, even if he doesn't single-handedly destroy England in this test. Anyway, there are a few super chats over here that people want you to address. Got Owen Aswar, who says, Rob, what about Root's inconsistently? If he's short of runs, can't he bat time like on the India tour in 2023? Pope seems a lost cause anyway. Yeah, we've mutually agreed to not talk about Pope in this podcast. We're done over there. But Root just has this issue with Patty Cummins, it seems. Like, he'll always nick out to Pat Cummins.
Yeah, and again, to be fair, it's no disgrace to be in trouble against one of the absolute best. And I don't think that Root can be shot at for playing silly shots and not trying and all that sort of stuff. I think Root is somebody that we have come to depend on, you know, England-wise. What did he get against India? 3 centuries in that series? Mm. Looked absolute class. 3 centuries and a 40 and a 50, I think. And we just expect him to do well. Now, there's lots of chat before this series of he hasn't scored 100. I'm more worried that he's never won a test in Australia. He's played loads of them. But he did get the monkey off his back in Brisbane with an unbeaten ton, and they allowed him to carry on batting when they've declared a couple of times when he's been unbeaten on hundreds. And you think, well, now he's going to kick on, and you know, Australia got something to worry about now because Joe Root's got his tail up and he's unbelievably good. But Cummins keeps getting him, and he's getting out to a dismissal that doesn't look good. It looks like somebody that's not great, and he is great, Joe Root. Joe Root's great at batting, but he's nicking off. And it doesn't look like he's quite set as well. Like, he's nicking off when he's faced 40 balls. And you think that's the time he never nicks off. He leaves it or he pushes it for one. And
he even got lucky with that dismissal, right? That was a non-dismissal. I thought, like, you know, Alex Carey had his fingers underneath the ball. But then Jared would get really annoyed at me because there are limitations in technology and he hates it when I bring this stuff up. And this was a weird test match for Snicko and all of those things anyway. Here's a fun super chat by Tada Hui or Tada Hu Chil Gucci. What a interesting. Cummins, Hefner, Root Bunny, Hayden Centerfold. Well, at least that's one thing that England saved us from. The Matthew Hayden member that we could have potentially seen at the MCG. Look, despite nicking to Pat Cummins consistently and all of that, Root is still England's top scorer in the series because of that 100 at 219 runs. Shockingly, Zach Crawley is their second highest run scorer at 214 because he's scored 250s, good ones. You know, 85 in this test and in the fourth innings was also good. But, you know, yes, wickets or 20 wickets wins you test matches, but you've got to be able to bat a bit better as well. And England have been short of runs overall as a unit, so you can't quite sidestep that. And one person who was back in this test, Rob, was filthy Nathan Lyon, I suppose, because Gazza's out of flavor these days. He said it was absolutely filthy to drop him from the second test. Well, Alex Carey starts calling him filthy. He's gone from the series, but he showed you just exactly what having a frontline spinner can offer you in conditions which could help you. 2 for 70 in his first outing and then 3 for 77. Literally takes 2 wickets in his very first over of the test match. He's also gone on to become Australia's second highest wicket taker in test cricket, overtaking Glenn McGrath. So, I mean, that's one way to bow out of the ashes, I suppose.
Yeah, and I made a mistake, and I probably, it's the first time I'm ever going to say this on something that's recorded, but I should have listened to Jared Kimber, because he's been banging on about Lyon's diminishing returns in terms of how often he bowls and how often he plays, and he is getting older and all that. And when the odds went up for the top wicket taker for Australia for the Ashes, I thought Lyon was a really good bet, because in my head, when I knew about all the injuries, I thought, well, Stark's old and he's a pace bowler and he's going to have a really big workload. I don't see how he plays five. I think all the others rotate. And as soon as, you know, Doggett's not going to win it, is he? As soon as one of the others is fit, Doggett's gone. Nisa and Boland play some but can't play all. And I was like, well, Lyon's going to play all five. How can he be 25% to get the most wickets for Australia? So I backed him, right? And I now feel a bit daft because that money's definitely gone. What he showed in this is if you've got a proper spinner, you're always in the game. And the fact that he got 2 wickets in his first over, having not bowled for ages and missed the last test match at his favourite place, you know, at Adelaide. They've got lots of people that love Adelaide. Just shows again how dumb England are. But he's walked off again in the middle of a test match. You know, when he walked off in the last Ashes, that was kind of the end of the fight for Australia, wasn't it? England won everything from then on and would have won, but for, you know, the very predictable Manchester rain. Lyon, I thought, was really crucial to this team, but it's a testament to how bad England have been that he's not that important to them now. But having a real spinner who goes bang, bang in the first innings when our guy's just, you know, trundling his arm over and over again, not his fault. Mm. He's not very good at spin bowling, but he's been asked to do it. Why didn't Root bowl? Why didn't Root have a go? He's bowled more overs than Jax in the first innings. Why didn't he bowl? Anyway.
Who has the more awkward bowling action, Will Jax or Josh Tung? Because it's oddly similar in the way they kind of shape up, right? Although one's a spinner and one's a fast bowler.
That's a good point. I think Tong did fine. I've not really said anything about him. I thought he bowled pretty well.
Same.
They don't appear to be using him as the main tail hoover, which I thought was his job for the Flashes, which that baffles me a bit. But I thought he did well. Lyon, excellent. But when he did a brilliant piece of fielding to injure himself, and who knows whether that's him done, because it took a long time for him to get over a very similar injury last time, didn't it? Who replaces Lyon? And does it matter? Mm. Like, probably not. You know, they could go anywhere. I think Murphy, if it's Murphy or Kuhneman, I think England, if they had anything about them, would try and smash them out of the attack, because they're nowhere near as good as Nathan Lyon is, those two guys. Mm. What's the other guy's called? Rocky Broccoli or whatever his name is. He might get a go. But England have got Will Jax. That's who they've got. Because they won't pick the guy that they planned to bowl because he's tall for 3 years. What's happened now? Has he shrunk? Like, why didn't he get a go? If you're going to pick, if you're going to bank on a guy for 3 years and throw all common sense and data and nous and cricketing knowledge in the bin to you know, put your flag on the mast or whatever the expression is with Bashir, to make him watch. That, I mean, did you see him wandering to the middle and taking a picture of the strip at the end of this test match? So sad. I'm like, oh, bloody hell, poor kid. You know, because I think he has way overachieved in his England career, Bashir. Like, what with the, it's not his fault. He's not nowhere near ready for test cricket. He doesn't play for a county. He plays for a bad county second 11 and doesn't get anything.
The worst part is that Yeah, once he goes back to county cricket, he's not going to be starting for Somerset either. So I do feel for the guy, as do I also feel for all those traveling English fans, because, you know, the Barmy Army, even on day four, was really, really uppity up, and the team hasn't given them much to celebrate over. Ronit Scheme says, or Skem says, tongues over, goes like filth, 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 Jaffa, filth, filth. No, not in this test match, man. I thought he actually bowled quite impeccable lines, and he kind of was one of those bowlers who was quite disciplined. So I'm going to give him marks. I felt like he kind of deserved more wickets in the first innings that he bowled, and does get 4 for 70 after that. Also, all of Australia's performers with the bat, barring Mitch Stark, take his 54 out. You know, Usman Khawaja, he's an opener since the last, what, 3-4 years. He was dropped on 6 by Harry Brook in the slip Gordon. Should have stuck. It wasn't a very tough chance. And Khawaja was stuck himself before that. He wasn't able to score much runs. Then he goes on a counter-attack. He shuts up shop again, then starts hitting again. Somehow, you know, Khawaja has managed 82 runs and 40, you know, combined 122 runs in this test match. A game that he wasn't even supposed to feature in. People were talking about, you know, the end of his test career and how this might be it. He was also batting out of position. And yeah, England seemed to be the sort of team to me that once Khawaja gets in, they don't really know how to or what to do with him, because he's someone who punishes the bad deliveries. And they chose to feed his hip with those friendly hip-high balls that he can pull away, which is his favorite shot, right?
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Yeah, and how do you not know what Khawaja's favourite shot is? Like you said, you haven't seen much of Weatherall before this series. Like, yeah. I've seen him millions of times in the Big Bash because I watch that every year. And I know what he likes. I would imagine that I've seen a lot more Big Bash than anybody in the England setup. And Jofra Archer's bowled him in the Big Bash. They should know that he likes certain shots, and they shouldn't just feed them. But Khawaja's 39 years old, and he's played, what, 85, 86 test matches now. You should know what to do with him, right? He's a very bad starter, and always has been. It's not just because he's old that he's bad at starting. He's always bad at starting. And he's one of those guys, you must take your chances if you get an early one, or he'll punish you. So they had a really easy chance, and they dropped it, and then he got loads of runs. But then they just kept feeding him like what he wanted, or bad balls. I mean, he got himself out a rubbish wide. I mean, there are some balls in this test match. I cannot stress enough how bad I am at cricket. There are some balls that got wickets in this test match that definitely wouldn't have got me out. And that should never happen. Sure, if you're setting up a declaration, you get caught on the rope, no problem. But Duckett's one. I can't get over how bad that dismissal is. In the second innings, you've got 4 minutes. All you have to do is leave the balls that aren't on your stumps. And if they're going to hit the stump, block it. That's it. That's your job for one over. Maybe six. One over. Not for very long. You don't have to get angry. You don't have to get tied up or frustrated. You can go and have a 40-minute rest. You can go and have a massage, an ice bath, a cup of tea, food, whatever you want. You've got 40 minutes off. In 4 minutes' time, your country needs you. Nick off. Play the leave on the way out. Like, get rid of all of them for now. England are useless. And again, infuriatingly, there's plenty of talent there. Plenty. I don't think there's much in the bowling, to be truthful. I think, you know, we went on about it last time. They sacked Jimmy Anderson for this. And they would rather... They think it's perfectly acceptable for him rather than to be around and help these guys. I mean, you were just talking about what do you do is you bowl in the channel over and over again when the pitch is good.
Yep.
Best ever at that, James Anderson? Best ever at doing that? Him or Glenn McGrath? And so, obviously, anyone with a brain would have kept Jimmy Anderson in the team, never mind in the setup. But if you're not going to keep him in the team, you take him and you say, look, this guy knows what to do. He did it for his whole career, and he's got 700-plus test match wickets. Listen to him. Yeah. No, don't need him. We've got this, lads. Well, they don't have a bowling coach, so they haven't got this. And the spin bowling coach is working with Will Jacks and defending him. Again, how can you possibly bag Will Jacks? He did really well. I would have liked to have seen more aggression from him in the second innings with the bat. I think if you said on another day, Will Jacks, we've all seen what he did in the IPL where he looked like he was going to get out to a leg spinner for ages and then just started smacking sixes everywhere. We've seen it in county cricket. We've seen it in lots of different formats. If you said to me, Will Jacks is facing 137 balls in that chase, I think, well, we've got a right chance here then. You know, how many did he get? 40. And you think, ah, like just half an hour of him going nuts, which is why, even though the shot in isolation looked horrible and everybody moaned about it loads, Smith got England back in it. And so, sure, yeah, he slogged one across the line and he got caught and it looked bad and it was a bad shot. But he played brilliant. And I think he's been all right this series. I mean, he was rubbish with the pink ball because he'd never used it before and they didn't plan or prepare, so he'd never seen that before. He kept badly with that. He's kept pretty well otherwise in all the other ones. Mm. He's been sawn off twice because of technology and rubbish decisions and stuff. I think he's done fine. You know, he's tried to whack it and he's come off. Like 60 was really good.
Speaking of technology and rubbish decisions, of course, something that did the rounds on social media and conventional mainstream media was the nick or non-nick of Alex Carey. Of course, Carey was player of the match. One of South Australia's favourite sons. Not their favourite son, though, but one of their favourite sons. He was dropped on 52, but anyway, goes on to score 106. In the second, or his second batting innings, he scores 72 runs, right? But even in the first innings, when he was on 72, there's an instance where, you know, there's an appeal. He has potentially nicked it. And ultimately on DRS, it has been, you know, decided that it's not out. Now, I personally thought there was daylight between bat and ball. And maybe, you know, I have a theory that maybe Alex Carey perhaps wanted to rattle England further, just definitely fuck with them mentally.
Good on him.
Yeah, when he says that I definitely had a feather edge on that. yeah, so I'm not sure what happened there, but Snicko comes out apologizing, England get their review back. How do you view that entire situation?
Funny, you know, like to be fair to Carey, he's brought some funny moments to the Ashes. And I think if you can come out and say words that make the other team perform worse, say them. And he did.
Yep.
As far as the technology goes, just to pick that apart for a minute, when when England were good and the most successful, or the best series, I think most Englishmen would say, was 05. And it was on free-to-air TV in England. It was a great summer. It was really hot. It was really fun. I was like 22 or something. Amazing, amazing series of extremely high-level cricket, which is something we haven't seen in this Ashes. Hmm. Really high-level cricket. Two very good teams going at it, hammer and tongs. But Channel 4... led by Richie Beno, Mark Nicholas, Simon Hughes was the analyst then. The coverage was ace. It was, you know, they kept buggering off and showing horse races during it. But anyway, the coverage was ace, and they had two things that we hadn't seen much of before: Snicko and Hotspot, right?
Yeah.
And they worked really well. And so if the line's doing that, if it hits the edge, it does that, and you know he's nicked it. And Hotspot was brilliant because it's the infrared camera. There's a big long white bat. And if there's a dark spot, he's hit it, right? Really good technology. Really useful. It 20 years ago, Bayram, we had that on normal telly. And now there's millions of different companies covering this cricket. Loads more cash in the game. And we have Snicko that definitely doesn't work and no hotspot. Yeah. You cannot use technology that doesn't work. So there's no point in going, well, that one's out because the line was three frames before. That one was one frame after, but that one isn't out. No one understands that. It's bollocks. So get rid of it. But it doesn't work. So now you have to make a decision based on eyes and ears, just like the old days, right? The eyes and ears definitely don't work, some of those decisions that we've seen. However, you cannot use technology.
Oh, my God. Some really shoddy umpiring in this test, man. So many instances that I can't even count them on my fingers anymore. But I agree with you. The one, you know, benefactor or, you know, someone who would be really enjoying themselves right now is the CEO of Ultra Edge, because their stocks have definitely gone up. Poor game for Snicko. But Alex Carey won't be complaining at all. 106 followed by 72.
He did the right thing. Yeah. So his comments were brilliant because he didn't say, I nicked that. He said, oh, I thought it sounded like I nicked it or something like that. And he didn't quite cut. All he did was just subtly stoke the fire. And just went, I can really wind these boys up here. And for Australia to win the media war, it's like, I don't mind, as an Englishman or an English fan, I've watched it my whole life, being outplayed by Australia at cricket. I don't mind it because for the most part, they've been better at cricket than us, particularly you know, 20 years ago. They were awesome at cricket and they beat everybody. So losing to Australia is fine. I can deal with it, no problem. But being outthought by Australians, that is very worrying, that we're being comprehensively outthought. We're being outspoken in the media. This is Australians we're talking about, Bayram. Australian people. It's incredible.
Well, Have you imagined what life must be like right now for Stuart Broad, who told Alex Carey that no one's going to remember you, and he's the one who's not only looking like $1 million with the bat, he's also doing the emotional cute stuff, which makes people love him, because of course rest in peace to his dad, but this was an emotional performance by him, playing at home as well. But then he's also constantly taking the piss out of both the English team by saying he nicked it, and then also taking the piss out of Nathan Lyon. So he's become one of those characters which, you know, you'd feel like an Ashes test match isn't an Ashes test anymore without Alex Carey in it. So, yeah, it's just ironic that Stuart Broad is on comms.
This is what we want. I mean, Stuart Broad did some unbelievably brilliant things for England, and as far as banter goes, best ever for England. And right to the very end, he was brilliant at it. You know, the Bales thing, where he swapped the Bales over and then got the wicket. Yeah. Genius. There aren't many people that can do what Stuart Broad could do with all the chat. But now he's getting paid by a bookie to be the ambassador, and he's getting paid by the telly to say incendiary stuff. He's not thought about it enough. Like, Stuart is much, much better than that from what we saw from his playing career. But now the thing is, when you've retired and you're talking about these teams, you need the players to give you something to work with, and they're not giving him anything, are they? They're not funny. They're not clever. They're not hard. They're not tough. Do you know what I mean? They're just a bunch of idiots who are doing idiotic things over and over again. It's indefensible what England have done on this series. And we've been stuffed plenty of times before. And I've gone and watched England get stuffed. And I don't mind, because the other team's better at cricket. And we tried and we're shit. And that's all right. But this lot, on paper, other than the bowling attack when it's fit, which it hasn't been for Australia, so that's a big chance for England, there's not that much in it. If you line them up, numbers, ability, all the rest, you go, what do you mean Weatherall, Khawaja, Green is three of your top five? What do you mean? Like, is that one better than what we've got?
And Travis Head is batting out of position as well. Let's not forget. I mean, he's someone who's so suited to that number five role, but we know he can open. He's done it in Asia, never outside of Asia in Test cricket. He was out on a loose ball first innings for, 10? But that's Crawley's wicket, not Garth's wicket. Then he's batting on 99, dropped by Harry Brook at Gully. Goes on to score 170, and that too of 219 balls. So Trav ball has been way more prominent than Baz ball in this series. 11th 100 for the guy, second of this Ashes series. He's the top scorer across both teams. And this was fourth ton at the Adelaide Oval as well. He pretty much gets one every year. And he's gotten one opening the batting as well. So I feel like there's a couple of guys over here who have papered over the cracks for Australia, because Travis Head and Mitch Stark, they've gone berserk. Throw Scotty Boland in there, because at times he's been unplayable. And yeah, I feel like with all those issues that Australia have had, they haven't at once looked like the sort of team that's going to be struggling over here, because they've been, for the most part, barring day one of both the first two test matches, they've been in complete control. Even if England fought back in this test, they were never ahead of the game. They were always chasing the game behind the eight ball. And Travis Head kind of blows them to smithereens in that third innings.
Yeah. England had Australia on the rack at lunch on day two in the first test match and lost it before the end of the day. So that's impossible. And since then, England haven't really had a look in. There was a bit where Smith was whacking it, where you think, well, actually, we're not a million miles away here. They were 285 for six, with two set batsmen. And you think, well, it's 150. 150 is what we need here. And with two set guys, Lyon is injured, Cummins is injured, Stark is tired because he's had to lead the whole thing for three test matches. Maybe they could have got some overs more under his belt earlier in the series if they'd have tried to bat better against him. Anyway, that was a chance, right? But England were never like anywhere near 50-50. People are like, oh, England are right back in this. They were like 1-8 from where they were, something like that. So they were never really in this test match. The fact that they played all right for a day and a day and a half, good. You know, at least they've done something. They played all right for a day and a half in the first test match, and they played all right for a day and a half in this one. But the facts are they're 3-0 down in 11 days because they didn't plan, and they've employed loads of people that are doing really, really badly at their jobs.
Yeah, anyway, we've got some super chats to go through, Rob, so won't keep you much for much longer, but we've got Sankalp, who's got a specific question for you. He says, hey, Rob, considering everything, is there still a part of you that wants this to continue? I was hooked for all of it, and isn't what they said is what it's all about? There was never a chance, even without Baz ball.
Well, if you're going to do it, if you're going to plan and decide, look, listen, lads, we don't care what anybody says, which is what they've said for every interview for 3 years. We don't care what any of you think about cricket. Has-beens is what Stokes referred to the old English players as. We don't care what any of you think. We're going to smack it. And it doesn't matter how many wickets you take. It matters how fast you bowl, is a quote. And we're there to have fun. And what did Stokes say? We know that when we've finished, we have given people more entertainment than they've ever. I love all that. Sounds great. So when you're 2-0 down against Australia, go out and smack it then. Do it. Mm. I'd much rather lose like that. Much, much rather lose in a blaze of glory than like wussing out and blocking and going, well, actually, we probably should have done some blocking at some point in the last 3 years. Yeah, you should when it's tough. You know, when Stark is moving the ball all over the place with a pink ball where he averages, what, 17 or something, stop whacking it. Like, stop playing the expansive drives on the up, right? They didn't do that. So they're a parody of themselves, this lot, and they don't understand anything. Yes, there is part of me that wants this to continue, because if England come out of this 3-2 down, they'll keep all the people and England will be a shambles for another 3 years. And we don't need that. So what it needs, as it always has, what we always need after Australia's tours, rip it up and start again and get some... Don't lose the aggression. You mustn't lose the aggression. Passive cricket is crap. But aggression, gears, is all about gears. Use the right gear at the right time, just like a car does. If you're slamming around your windy country roads in fifth gear, you're going to crash the car. And that's what England have done here, right? They've gone into first when they should have been in fourth, and they've gone into fifth when they should have been in first. And that's mainly why they're 3-0 down. Also, they don't understand anything because they're daft, and they've talked themselves into a bubble of nonsense, which they've all bought into. Then it got popped by a good cricket team, and they don't know what to do. They've got no idea what to do.
Well, it's funny how, you know, over the last 3 years, there have been occasions where they've, you know, kind of stepped on the pedal on a country highway and they've crashed. But over here, they were on a proper highway, the Autobahn, if you will. And they were going at, what, 10 miles per hour at times. So it is like the whole entertainment sort of rhetoric has been challenged by themselves, which is, it's interesting. Anyway, I've got the Scene Upload over here who says, other than the absent coaching, what's more shocking is the ECB and Loughborough have the most rocket science-y wing for cricket research, yet they don't think it's worthwhile having any analyst for 3 years.
Yeah, I went to Loughborough and studied sport. Really fun place it was when I was there, and people like Chris Reed were there and Monty was there and all that sort of stuff. And they have amazing resources, you know, countrywide best standard resources of you know, some of the guys that were lecturing the likes of me. Not that I went to many of them, but they were super smart and came up with stuff. I mean, do you remember the tour where England had spent ages on sweat research to see who sweated the most and the least? So it transpired that Alistair Cook didn't sweat, basically. So when England were very keen to keep the ball in a certain condition, you weren't allowed to touch it if you were a sweat box, right? I wouldn't have been allowed anywhere near it in hot conditions. They throwed a ball to Alistair Cook, kept it dry. That's the level of research they used to go into. And that team used to win loads of cricket matches.
Yeah.
And they stuffed Australia 3-1. And they won, what, three of them by an innings in that series? Or two of them by an innings? Incredible team. All the top six averaged 40, which helps. But they didn't leave any stones unturned, right? And when England won the World Cup in 2019, largely through aggression, they had things like Plunkett in the middle overs. Unbelievable. They were the first team to properly understand when you're meant to bash it. If you've got a good pitch, bash the hell out of it early and get ahead of the game. Loads of clever stuff. And they used analysts. And they when they lost to Bangladesh and Peter Moores lost his job for one of the times he lost his job, he came out and said, we'll have to look at the data. After they just got smashed by Bangladesh in the World Cup, we'll have to look at the data, was the quote. And he got murdered for it. And he said it at the wrong time. It's so difficult to say the right thing when you've just been, you know, the worst result ever has happened and there's a microphone in your face. Can't imagine how difficult that is. But he got murdered for that. And since that bit, England have kind of like turned their nose up at data and science and all this sort of thing. The fact is there's lots of clever people of all nationalities that live in England that know about the data side of it. At the very, I speak to data analysts a lot in the job that I've got. And we've got guys that work with teams from international cricket to IPL advising, and people are on in dugouts at the IL20 now that work for the company that I work for. And you must have one of those guys around, even if you then choose to ignore it and go, right, well, we're vibes and we're picking someone on height and all this. You do you, right? You're the boss and you'll live and die by those decisions. But if you have somebody that says, look, right, here's some empirical, quantitative, like factual stuff here. If you declare at this point, right, you will become, with Joe Root 120 not out, you will become 6% less likely to win this game. This is based on simulations done with millions and millions of accurate sample size data, right? If you declare now, you are reducing your chances of winning this match and therefore the Ashes series, talking about the last Ashes first test at Edgbaston here. England on the balcony, in you come, Joe. Don't worry that Robinson's not out with you. 2 wickets in hand. In you come. Let's have a crack. Oh, look, lost the test. Done that twice. The Pakistan declaration, mental. Why not have a guy in there that can go, like, call him a geek, call him whatever you want, just a guy with numbers that goes, look, this guy, Cameron Green gets bowled all the time, right? He just does. Mm. And Stokes gets bowled all the time by Stark. You can present data that goes, look, here is, I did it before this Ashes series, right? I just went back and I looked at everybody's dismissals since the last start of the last Ashes. And normally you're 65 to 68% caught if you're a normal batter, right? I don't want to get too geeky, but that's about what you are. And the England middle order, Root, Stokes, Pope were the three, 50% between them caught. Hmm. So they're getting bowled all the time because they're doing ramps and scoops and sweeps. There are, and you can present this, they did it to Bairstow when he used to get bowled all the time. They showed him and they went, Johnny, you're getting bowled all the time. He knows that. But when there's data that says, look, these are the balls that are bowling you, he can go away with somebody like a batting coach, right? They've got one of them, I think, and go, look, these are the, like, McCullum was really good at batting. Why can't he tell somebody? Triscothic, really good at batting. He can tell them. Go, look, this is how, I don't know any of this stuff. This is how you, if you move your feet like this, or if you play this, or your elbow goes there, then you won't get bowled as much. Surely that's helpful, right? That helps.
I mean, thing is, Rob, it's helpful to have like a soundboard. You know, you don't want to be the ultimate authority on all things considering, you know, the team and its success or its failure, because having different perspectives and, you know, some actual statistical data could benefit you as a unit. And I feel like it's just, you know, why they say what they say in front of the media, because that dressing room is quite dogmatic. We hear the dressing room talk all the time in front of the media, which is a bit bizarre, but I've always backed them in the sense that, okay, you know what? They don't care about the media. They just want to kind of back themselves. But sometimes when you are losing the plot or even winning games, it's good to have a third person's perspective from within your core to challenge what you are doing. And there's nothing wrong with that. Every good organization has that.
It's such a good point. So I know people that know the England setup. I know people that are mates with Luke Wright. I know people that are mates with Rob Key and all this sort of thing. And I've never heard anything other than they're really good blokes. And that's great. You know, that's brilliant. I'd imagine they are super fun to have a beer with, play golf with, whatever. But when you've got McCullum, Key, Wright, these guys are in their bubble where they just get other lads in that like playing golf and going for a beer. And they say, look, Crawley's shit, but he likes cigars and beers. Let's go for cigars and beers and let's go to the casino. They literally booked into a hotel next to a casino. And Cass is wandering around with big stacks of money falling out of his pockets. This isn't made up. That happened. There's money blown. Like, how bad a look is that before a test match when you're 2-0 down? Anyway.
The Baz bowling libertines.
Just nonsense, isn't it? But when you've got that group of lads that like playing golf and drinking beer, great, good on them. Hmm. Nothing wrong with that at all. There's also nothing wrong, as you say, why not have a guy, you know, you can either have somebody like Jared that can talk and present stuff in a way that Jared really knows the mechanics of cricket. I know nothing about that. He could go, look, I've got this stuff and the team at Good Areas those guys blow my mind when they start chatting about Indian cricket. I'm like, shit, I thought I knew my stuff. I know nothing compared to those guys. They have data that England clearly don't look at. You could have someone like Jared that can speak to people and go, look, maybe this. Australia have phoned Jared up before and said, what do you reckon? Or you can have an out-and-out mega geek. You know, look at Moneyball. Watch that film. Read the book. And you just go, look, here's some numbers. Have a look. Like, if you want me to tell you what they mean, sure. But anyone can get data from anywhere, but if you present numbers that are like, if you just look at these numbers, you'll be better equipped to make decisions when you're losing your mind. Yeah. And that's it. Here's the numbers. They don't look and they don't ask anyone to do that. So they don't have somebody that, if you've got a load of, like, how many businesses function with like just a culture of one type of person? You want loads of different types. I don't do all the spreadsheet stuff because I'm complete shit at it, right? The clever people do that. I don't do the modeling because I'm not clever enough. I don't do the algorithms because my brain doesn't work like that. So I don't sit there mucking about with stuff I'm shit at. The clever people do that, Bayram. I do the watch the cricket, work out what the prices are. That's what I do because I'm good at that. So they need somebody that can, exactly what you said, a sounding board or a different point of view or something, because they've all got the same point of view and it's wrong. But they've got no one to tell them because the boss,
I mean,
who will police the police, Bayram?
You often need another set of eyes and fresh perspective. Like, for instance, Jared, in my opinion, is one of the best cricket writers of all time and definitely the best of his generation. And whenever he writes something, he sends it over and asks us all to kind of take a look at it. And whatever feedback we have, he will often incorporate it. And, you know, that's kind of what you need. You need to have a sort of organization where multiple people have different opinions and you kind of come to a conclusion, and that's how you succeed. Anyway, this was a really long conversation and tangent. We've got to finish this show, Rob. Two super chats to go.
My fault.
Owen Aswar once again says, are we going to see Stokes Root hanging their boots like Trott, Swan, Bell, etc. did 12 years earlier? I don't believe so, because they don't have any replacement for Joe Root, so he could, you know, kind of cock up in the remaining two test matches and still remain England's biggest or most important batter. And Stokesy is great for balance, and as long as his body is functioning, there is, I feel like there's benefit of having him in the test team. So I don't think they'll be thinking along those lines. No.
No, I think Root has Tendulkar's record in his sights and is probably,
you think?
Probably highly focused to continue. I think he's that good. He could possibly tour again. I wouldn't rule that out. It's possible. I can't see it, but I don't see Root just quitting. I would be less surprised if Stokes bagged it after this series, particularly if it was 5.
Okay.
But no, probably not, like they all just jack it in.
Yeah, I mean, look, they don't have a vast pipeline going, you know, behind the scenes, because I know the county championship exists, but we talked about the potential batting replacements. You've got the Roo brothers, you've got Asa Tribe. I mean, don't get Rob started talking about Asa Tribe right now, because that's another 15 minutes. And yeah, bowlers, I don't even know, man. Matt Fisher, Matthew Potts, it's not looking too nice. And I don't think either of those guys are retiring at the end of the series. Although, let's see if we're proven wrong. Final super chat of the day, the scene uploader, and this is an important one. He asks, which players should England field in the next two games? Surely not Jofra Archer. Should play Bethel and a bunch of young Lions. What else is their gain, especially when they aren't? When they actually don't care about World Test Championship points. It's a good proposition. I feel like you could probably blood some new young talent over here, especially give some bowlers rest. Jofra needs to be put on ice, maybe Brydon Carse as well. But yeah, you know, right now Crawley is saying the 3-2 would be a good result, so you never know where the head's at.
Yeah, I would make lots of changes. So you probably have to put Brook on like the naughty step and go, listen, Harry, like this is silly, mate. Obviously, he's going to play another 50 tests, and you know, minimum you'd hope from an England point of view. But to perform like this is probably get him out of the firing line for a bit and go, look, let's have a look at the other ones. You may as well. You're 3-0 down. And the thing about Bethel, I feel a bit sorry for Bethel when they made him limited overs captain in the absence of it, when he'd done nothing and he'd performed quite badly in his limited opportunities. You know, he hadn't scored a run for a long time. And then he got Bumrah, didn't he? He got totally, like, that shot when Bumrah cleaned him up after he blocked for a bit was as bad a dismissal as I've seen this year. So the thing with Bethel is he's clearly got bags of talent. He's 21. So you cannot have that guy spending 2 years not playing cricket. He must get better at cricket by being exposed and playing cricket matches. At least Tribe's played loads of cricket with extreme success. And when he's gone up a level, he's done well at that. He's played cricket the whole time. Bethel's been carrying drinks in his formative years, which is a crime. So get Bethel in, why not? Yeah, sure, he hasn't got a first-class 100 and he probably shouldn't be in the squad. But Ollie Pope shouldn't be in the squad either. And he bats number 3 for England and has done loads of times. Bethel for sure. You may as well see what Fisher's got. Give Potts a go. Let Bashir bowl. Why the hell not? Like, is he ever going to play cricket again? Like, after this series? Like, how on earth have they done what they've done to his career? I mean, Sonny Baker could be another one-cap wonder as the ship's going down. Is he over there? Probably.
He's got fuck it, dude. Get Toby Roland Jones back into the mix. Well, proper could, throwback.
Well, yeah. Surely, I mean, the last dafter selection that I can remember was the Pattinson one. When his brother plays for Australia and he turns up and plays instead of Hoggard for England in a test match at Headingley. We're back to that nonsense levels. Give them all a go. Like, honestly, give them all a go. I sincerely hope it's not the end of Root. I don't care whether it's the end of Stokes. Give the other guys a go.
Unretire Jimmy Anderson. Give Mohammed Abbas citizenship because Pakistan sure aren't going to play him. That's the best bet. I feel like England are going to struggle in this upcoming, you know, generation because the crop of players that's coming up, A, they're not, you know, they are being picked, these players, on the basis of how well they can hit. And Bethel is a prime example. No first-class hundreds, no problem. And secondly, the bowling just looks very, very daft, right? And that's going to be a concern. Anyway, that kind of wraps things up. It's been fun, Rob. 100-minute-plus rant with you, as always. Some people will be really, really, upset at me interrupting you at times. But trust me, if I hadn't, this would have been a 2.5-hour show.
You don't interrupt me, yeah, but where that chat comes from.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for giving us your time, mate. And to all of you, thank you as well for turning up and sending all of your comments, interactions and super chats. Do not forget that you can become a paid subscriber of Good Areas. All of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our Patreon patrons, and you can become one of them by going to Patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast. That way you can enjoy ad-free content, you can talk to us exclusively, and you can give us podcast recommendations as well. And lastly, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be a one-stop shop, and that'll give you access to all of the work that we do as part of our team with respect to, you know, written content, videos, podcasts. It's been a long 5 days. We're all tired. We've got to go sleep. So you guys take care.
Merry Christmas.
See you soon enough. Yeah, Merry Christmas to you too. I'm expecting a Christmas present.
On the way.
And of course, you winning your bet is the best thing that's happened to us in these last 5 days. Because other than that, there wasn't great cricket to be, consumed. Anyway. See you all soon enough. That's all for now. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.